Hi. Sorry. I'm Angela, alcoholic addict. Hi, my sobriety date is 7/7/16. With saying that, I've never had a sober date. I'm 38 years old, and I started using and drinking when I was 16. So that was decades and centuries ago, what feels like. I'm sorry, I'm like really nervous, but okay. So he made me a guideline because I will be all over the fucking place. So thank God for this. I was born January 26, 1981 at Williams Air Force Base in Mesa, Arizona. My family was military. My grandfather was in the military for 28 years. My father was also in the military. So after I was born, my mom was still like 17, 18 years old, didn't know what the hell to do with a tiny little baby, you know, and having an alcoholic for a husband. So she gave me to my grandparents, who pretty much raised me all the way up until I was 8 years old. And I would see my mom in and out throughout the years, just come say hi, whatever. But my grandparents were the one who were my mom and dad. And I'm sure some of you guys can relate to all that too. So I didn't really understand why my mom didn't want me. Like, what did I do as a kid? Like, how come, you know, I can't go with you? So that part of like abandonment set in at like a really young age. And so I remember my mom coming home one day and grabbing me and grabbing all my stuff, saying, okay, well, we're moving to Vegas and you're coming with me. So I was ripped out of my home that I knew of like since birth, you know, and I didn't want to go. So we get there, and, you know, I have, like, three younger sisters along the way. And she's married to some other guy who, again, is an alcoholic. We get there, and it seems okay. I seemed all right, getting used to, you know, kind of making friends, but not really making friends. I didn't know how. And I just knew in some way, like, I was different. I didn't belong. I didn't have, like, all the cool things growing up. Like, you know, we didn't have, like, the cool clothes, the cool shoes, you know, whatever. Everything was, like, hand-me-downs from churches and whatever was given. So that's kind of how we made it. My stepdad laid tile, and my mom worked overnights at Toys R Us. And I remember it started getting kind of bad when he would come home, you know, drunk as shit. And I would hide my sisters in the closets, because I knew that he would come home, like, super angry, drunk. Can I have some water real quick? Ian? He would come home and beat on any one of us that he could grab, so I would just hide them and put a blanket over them and shut the closet door. And it would be me that he would get a hold of. And there was just times I remember not being able to go to school because I had bruises everywhere, and nobody was supposed to know, so I'd have to stay home. And my mom got a second job. I didn't know if she knew about the abuse or not yet, but I was still a kid. I didn't know. I remember them fighting a whole lot, and I would still, again, hide my sisters in my room or under the bed or something just to protect them. And so we would need, like, school clothes or whatever, and so he would take me. I don't know if it was just my other sisters or if it was just me, but he would take me into dressing rooms and do things to me that we're not supposed to talk about, remember? So we don't talk about those things. And I just remember him saying, this is what you do for people that you love. This is how you show somebody you love them. And that happened a whole lot. And I never told, because if I told, my mom would get hurt or one of my sisters would get hurt. So I just kept quiet. And growing up, you know, it was still the same thing. You know, we weren't allowed to go outside and make friends and play with kids outside of the neighborhood because he didn't want anybody to tell what was going on at home, right? So it was just us girls playing in a backyard, you know. And one time he had taken me into the truck and he goes, we're going to go see so-and-so and, you know, you're going to go be nice to him. You're going to go and, you know, your sisters need to eat. We need to pay the bill. You know, you're going to go visit somebody. I was 7 years old. 7 years old. He's flipping me for fucking dope and alcohol and money. I didn't know any better because that's what I do for people that I loved, and I loved my sisters. So as I got older, it stopped, and I thought that there was something wrong with me. Like, I wasn't good enough to help my family anymore. And that's because I was just a kid. But I remember, you know, that happened till I was 15, and my mom was just like, this is it, we're getting a divorce, blah, 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 but I don't have the money to do it. I was 16. And I was already, you know, talking to art colleges, you know, because I wanted to go to an art college so fucking badly. And I dropped out and went to work as a stripper to pay for my mom's divorce, to buy my sister's clothes, to buy my sister's food, whatever they needed to get out of that house, to save them. And that's what I did. 18 years old, I had my own apartment, you know, I was just working, and I'm sorry, 16, I had my first drink. It was a Mickey's. Oh, man, it was fucking nasty. But the bottle caps were cool. You know, but then I felt this feeling that I've never felt before, this feeling of I can't feel anything. I don't have to be sad anymore. I don't have to be hurt anymore. You know, so this is fun. So the drinking started. I remember getting a bottle of Avalanche. This big-ass bottle with a bunch of crystals in it. We broke it and chewed all the candy after we were done drinking it. But, my drug use started at 19. I had a doctor's appointment. And, he gave me a script for Vicodin, and that was even better than the alcohol, to be honest, you know, because it just made me numb. I was there, but I wasn't there. Like, I could feel things, but I couldn't feel them, you know. That was the start of all of it, and then, you know, the prescription of Vicodin kept coming with having to use more and more because my body was just getting so used to it. I'm like, what the hell is happening? Why am I having to pay so much more money to get more pills? And somebody offered me some Oxy. I did a line of Oxy in a dirty-ass bathroom. And so, you know, it was just like even better than the Vicodin. I'm going to use some more of this, and this is just... melted my face right off, and I'm like, I want to do that again, you know? And it was just getting so expensive and more, you know, having to spend more money than I should have. But then the money ran out, and, you know, I was having to do things to get money for my drugs. You know, and of course, you know, it doesn't matter because it's just what we do. And, it just started escalating because my grandparents got really sick and she was on hospice. And I was like, I'll take care of you. I don't want you going to a nursing home. I will take care of you. High as fuck. I will take care of you, Grandma. Let's go. So while she's getting her prescription to Percocet, I'm like, I need some too. I have a paper cut. Can I have some? So here, 5 for me and 1 for you, Grandma. Type thing, you know, and it was just bad. I was stealing her meds, man. That's shitty. But, you know, it stayed up until pills until 3 years ago. It started getting messy. I had another child, and he's seven now, and after he was born, I was given another prescription for Vicodin, and it just kept getting worse, and I was having affairs on my baby's dad to make money for my pills and take my husband's money for his pills, and it was just a big mess. And, you know, he started eventually finding out, and finding out about the affairs. I was having guys drop me off in front of my house with him in the, you know, the yard. Who does that? I do that. But he finally had enough to where he packed up everything. He packed up the whole entire house, left a mattress on the floor with a lamp next to the bed, and that was it. And I remember him driving away from the house, and all I could wait for was him hitting that corner so I could go back in and do a shot, because that would make me feel better. My kids are taken care of. He's going with his dad. My oldest is with his mom, you know, with my mom. So what else? So I'm sitting in this room on the mattress with a needle, being entirely sad, because I'm like, how did it come to this? How did it come to this? And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to stop. This is going to change, and I'm going to go live with my sister. So I lived with my sister. I did dope over there. She kicked me out, and I had some friends that took me in. They were like, okay, well, you can come stay with us and this and that. So I go, and we're just, like, using the entire week or two that I was there. And one night, there was a bunch of people over there, and I just remember, like, passing out. I don't remember anything, but I did wake up to being zip-tied three times around my wrist, and I had several people, maybe seven, I think it was. I was being raped, and the woman who I was living with was just brushing my hair out of my face, telling me it's going to be over soon. Just hang on. It'll be over in a minute. And I just passed right back out. And the next thing I remember is they're dragging me to my mom's house and dumping me on my mom's front porch and leaving. My mom called 911 and the ambulance came, and I died twice on the way to the hospital. Just flatlined, like, out. And when I was in the hospital bed, I woke up and I was being asked questions and this and that. And it was hard for anybody to understand and believe, because I was a junkie, that nobody could actually do that to somebody like me. It's like a little boy who cried wolf. So, you know, I promised my mom that this was it, that I wanted to get sober, that I wanted to get help, because I was afraid that if I was going to die, I was going to die and stay dead. My kids need me, you know, whether or not I was an addict, you know, I mean, I had to do something for them. If it wasn't for me, it was going to be for them too. So my mom let me stay at her house, and I detoxed. Well, I called Austin Recovery, and they're like, you need to come in, and you need to come in clean. I'm like, oh, that's not going to work for me. It's not. Nah. But the thing is that I wanted it that bad, to where I will do what I need to do to stay my ass in this house, on this couch, to get sober. Because this is my life. The detox was the worst fucking thing I've ever gone through in my life. It made me want to die, really. But the day came to where I came here, and on the drive, I'm like, yes, I'm going to fucking treatment. This is going to be so much fun out in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be a fucking vacation. And so when my baby's dad dropped me off, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Let's go. let's go away from here. Let's go. And he was like, you have nowhere to fucking go. So, and he was right. He was absolutely right. I had nowhere else to go. And, you know, why not give this place a chance? Why not give myself a chance? So I came, and I was not wanting to listen to anybody. Nobody had the fucking answers that I needed. You know, I made some friends, and, you know, I think I did some shit that I probably should have been kicked out of here for. I mean, like, not bringing dope in or anything, but just being me. You know, and these people were not giving up on me. These people weren't giving up on me. They weren't having me leave. They were just talking to me like, we can't do this shit. This is addict behavior. You know, let's do something different. You know, they were keeping me here because I think maybe they knew that I had a chance. I just didn't feel like I was deserving of that chance. Thirty days came and went, and they were like, okay, well, you're going to have to go. I don't have anywhere to go. I'm not leaving here. I'm not going anywhere. You can't make me. But so, luckily, they gave me, you know, for me, for what I call this, my next 30 days is of a lifetime, because that is where I really just shut the fuck up and listened and sat in my chair, stopped running around, stopped being me. I was learning things. I started opening my big book, highlighting shit that actually pertained to me. Like, oh my God, these people have the same life as I do. You know, I was doing a lot better. And so I left here and I had a sober home. But the thing is, I was still scared to leave because I only had 29 cents in my bank account. 29 cents in my bank account. I don't have a job. I don't know Austin. And where the hell, what's going to happen to me, you know? And here I go with me, you know? And they threw me out there. There they go. Good luck. And so I went, and I got a job. I got a job. You know, and I'm so grateful for this job, man, because my boss was actually in recovery as well. She worked my ass off, and that was something, honestly, that I look back and think, I needed that. My first year recovery, I needed to just work in meetings. That is it. And that's exactly what I did. I had no car. I took my ass on the bus. I love the bus. Sometimes I just want to ride the bus just to ride the bus because it's so humbling, you know? It's just one of those things for me. But, you know, we would hold the Sunday meetings over down on Congress, and I would run my ass with my little backpack, run, just so I could come and make the Sunday night meeting, because it's that important in my life to my recovery. That's my willingness, you know. My 12 steps, working my 12 steps. That wasn't fun, kind of, the first time around, because I had to write things, and I had to learn so much about me that I didn't want to hear. I didn't like that at all. But, you know, it was good, because the things that I didn't want to hear about me are the things that I can grow from to change, to make myself a better person, you know, and to help somebody else, share experience. So, that's pretty much 12... rebuilding relationships. Sorry, I'm reading off the paper because it works for me. Rebuilding relationships. My relationship with my son's father is so much better than I ever thought it would be. My first year, we were just back and forth about the baby, you know, Zane. Just, and I want to see him right fucking now, and you can't have him right now. You know, and I didn't think that, you know, he was still angry about the shit that I had done in my past. You know, just, and I get that now. He had every right to be. But after, you know, some time, you know, I made my amends with him. You know, he forgave me. We are actually, like, really good friends and can talk about things and have a good, healthy relationship for our child. I see him on Sundays, which is great. So, and then the relationship that I have with my son, chewing on his nails, he's 18, you know, and dude, it just, for me, it kind of sucks because, like, pretty soon he's going to be going to college. And it's like, I just got you back, dude. Just got you back. But, you know, it's great because, you know, he grew up in this sick home. And it didn't affect him in a way that I thought it should, or we all know that it could have gone, you know, him running the streets. And he just does none of that. And I'm just so very proud of him. The relationship with my mother, I keep her at a distance. But I do love her a lot, and she is, like, super supportive. I can talk to her about things, and if I'm having a bad day, she tries to just, like, help me get through it. I can actually be somebody's friend and not want to get anything from you, you know, and help you and not get anything in return. So I just, you know, try to be a good person. I remember one time I had a little buddy who came here and left, and he was living in Oxford with us, and he was sick. He had a bad disease, but the thing is like he ran out of his pain meds, and here I am wanting to fucking help everybody and save the fucking world, and I'll help you. You know, my mom had said, okay, well, here, come get some pain meds from me and go take them to him. And I'm thinking, okay, as long as I'm not doing them, I'm not doing anything wrong. But that's just wrong. Yeah, I figured out that's just, you don't fucking do that. I consider it a service work. And that's just, I'm so serious. I'm like, well, I'm not doing it. I'm just helping him. He's sick and dying, you know. He doesn't feel good, so I can help him. That did not work out because, you know, my fiance found out about it because I didn't tell him, and that's also keeping secrets. Not okay either. And us being addicts and alcoholics, you want to believe somebody. But, you know, I had to take a drug test and a hair follicle test so that he knew that I wasn't using, so that was good. I wasn't worried about it. But, yeah, I just, you know, I'm not perfect. This is my first time doing this whole thing, and I'm just like a person trying to get this just as much as you guys are, you know. I think that's a long time from now. Today is awesome because I have experienced so much, you know, in recovery and seeing some beautiful places, places I've never thought I'd see, you know, and I lived in Oxford sober living for a year, and I did some amazing things. I was, you know, just traveling and seeing different cities and beaches. I'm like, holy shit, this beach is amazing, and it's so much better when you're sober. Oh my God, take that in. So I worked in a recovery treatment center for a year, and I really liked it a lot. It was quite the experience because that recovery wasn't the way that it works here, I guess. It was just really different, and I'm like, no. I take care of the elderly, which is a lot of fun because they're the coolest people in the world. And I can just walk in with, you know, my little scars, my little tattoos, and they say nothing about it except for one of them calls them my paintings. She's like, where did all those paintings come from? And she's like, I do hand stitch. I'm like, you're not hand stitching anything on me right now. But, you know, it's good because, you know, it keeps me grounded, and their sense of, like, loving and being accepting, and it just, like, makes me want to continue to be better, you know. I tried to help them in the way that I couldn't help my grandparents, you know, because in that time I was using and drinking and taking advantage. But, you know, it's just like a super rewarding job. But my 12 steps, again, like I say, you know, I work them. I have to work them all the time, you know, because if not, just for me, bad shit happens. It's kind of like being that yes man. Remember that movie, Yes Man? Yeah. If you don't say yes, bad shit happens. Kind of like that for me. So I just try to, you know, do my best every day to do my daily practices. Okay, and that's all I have. And thank you so much.